Dr. Wayne Lewis's term thus far as Kentucky's Commissioner of Education has been brief but eventful. Shortly after his appointment as interim commissioner last year, Lewis recommended that the state take over management of Jefferson County Public Schools, citing the findings of an audit. The district eventually negotiated a settlement with the state that averted a takeover. Lewis has also been a vocal supporter of charter schools, recently approved for operation in Kentucky, but still without a funding mechanism. I'm Rick Howlett. Today on WFPL's In Conversation, Dr. Wayne Lewis talks with us about those topics and more. We also want to hear from you. Call us or join us on social media. Dr. Wayne Lewis, Kentucky's Commissioner of Education, this hour on WFPL's In Conversation. First, the news.
On the newest episode of Five Things, it's writer Minda Honey talking about how a particular kitchen appliance helps connect her to her heritage.
I'm like this like jobless, carless grad student, and the first thing I do is like go out and buy a $180 rice cooker. And my roommates are all like, what are you doing? I'm like, please do not touch this rice cooker.
Five Things, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to WFPL's In Conversation. I'm Rick Howlett, and today we're joined by Kentucky's Commissioner of Education, Dr. Wayne Lewis. Dr. Lewis was first appointed interim commissioner by the Kentucky Board of Education in April of 2018, and he was named to the position permanently last October. Dr. Lewis has worked as a classroom teacher, teacher educator, post-secondary faculty member, and program administrator at the undergraduate and graduate levels, and as an executive administrator in state government. He most recently served as the executive director of educational policy and programs with the Kentucky Cabinet for Education and Workforce Development. And he joins us today. Dr. Lewis, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good to have you here. We invite you to join our conversation, have a question or comment about the corrective plan agreed to by JCPS and the state. What about charter schools, graduation requirements, school safety, the legislative agenda as it relates to education in this legislative session? Give us a call, 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. You can also reach us through social media. Our Twitter hashtag is WFPL Conversation, and we're also on Facebook. Dr. Lewis, let's begin with Jefferson County Public Schools. The State Education Department and the district came to an agreement on a corrective action plan that averted a full takeover of JCPS. Now, this followed an audit initiated by your predecessor that found a number of wide-ranging issues, problems with organization in the central office, the student assignment plan, the use of physical restraint and seclusion, staff training, among others. District officials, including the superintendent, Dr. Marty Polio, who we plan to have on the program, by the way, in the near future, say they had already begun working on some of these matters. What's your assessment of how the district has responded to those and other issues since the corrective plan was implemented?
Well, Dr. Polio and I have a fantastic relationship. We talk together pretty often. Our team and his team work really collaboratively. They work collaboratively in developing what the corrective action plan would be for all of the areas of deficiency noted in the audit. Following the development of that plan and the approval of that plan, we got to work immediately, side by side, hand in hand, in beginning to implement that plan. To be clear, there is tremendous work to do. The management review, the management audit, the findings of the management audit revealed significant deficiencies in the district. I think very few people have said that they disagree with that or continue to say that they disagree with that. I am very hopeful for the possibilities moving forward. We've done the initial work of identifying how we move forward. But to be frank, now begins the most difficult part, which is implementing what is an extremely rigorous plan.
Is there a timetable for getting these things resolved?
The timetable that exists in the agreement is what guides us in terms of when the department comes back to do another management audit. That's a two-year time period. But that two-year time period is not sufficient for addressing all of the deficiencies in the audit. neither is it my expectation, to be honest with you, that in 2 years' time, everything we've identified has been completely addressed. My expectation over the next 2 years, and I believe Dr. Polio's expectation of this process as well, is that the district and the department work together to implement the plan, that the district moves forward with good faith and starts to have the difficult conversations, makes the difficult moves, and has made significant progress toward addressing those deficiencies at the end of 2 years. And then at that point, the department will conduct another management audit. I will make another recommendation. The possibilities are that we release the findings to the district. The district moves forward on its own. I could recommend corrective action through state assistance or state management, one of those three options.
I see. Now, one big issue that has been raised, and the Supreme Court ruled a number of years ago, as you well know, that the JCPS student assignment plan was unconstitutional. They didn't suggest how to change it, what to do to change it. They just said it can't be like this, and the district got busy a number of years ago changing the student assignment plan to conform with the Supreme Court ruling. What's your assessment of what kind of job they've done with that? Now, obviously, that came up in the audit as well, but what's your assessment of how they've responded to the Supreme Court ruling?
So I won't go further than just speaking to the findings of the audit with respect to the student assignment plan. The findings of the audit suggest that the current method of assigning students leads to or contributes to disparities that we see in students. There are significant equity concerns that arise with the way that students are currently assigned to schools. What we've asked in the agreement and what we've agreed to with the district is that the district would continue to implement the processes that it has in place to collect stakeholder feedback, to work with stakeholders, to develop a plan and implement a plan for changing the student assignment plan. We have not directed and will not direct what we want that plan to be. I thought it was pretty interesting during the period where we were negotiating terms that it continued to come up in conversation that the major sticking point for us was the student assignment plan, and that, in fact, was not the case at all. To be honest with you, had we moved forward with state management, the process we likely would have used would have been the exact process that JCPS is going through. Even with the authority, if we had the authority to mandate what a student assignment plan would be in Jefferson County or any other district, it would not be wise to do so. The best way to craft something like that is to start from the ground up, to get stakeholders to help to develop it, because if you don't do that, you won't have buy-in. And if you don't have buy-in on the part of the community and stakeholders, that plan has no chance of being successful, regardless of how brilliantly crafted it was.
We're talking with Dr. Wayne Lewis, who is the Commissioner of Education for Kentucky. And we welcome your input. You have a question or comment for Dr. Lewis regarding education here in the Commonwealth? Give us a call at 502-814-8255, 502-814-TALK. You can also submit a question or a comment on social media. Our Twitter hashtag is WFPL Conversation, and we're also on Facebook. Dr. Lewis, there have been a number of suicides among children within the Jefferson County Public School System here this school year. I think the last number was that I saw was 8 this academic year. The district announced yesterday there's going to be a summit. What are your thoughts on this, and what action needs to be taken?
You know, it's absolutely the saddest and most troubling part, I believe, of what's going on with our young people right now. Sadly, it's not just the numbers that we're seeing in Jefferson County, but we're actually seeing young people across our state and, in fact, across our nation take their own lives in numbers and in percents that we've never seen before. We absolutely have to address it. I'm really pleased with the steps that Dr. Polio is taking to call together not just folks in Jefferson County, but superintendents and leaders from across the state to invite them to participate in a forum. He shared that with me recently. I'm going to get that on my calendar, and I'll absolutely be there to take part in that as well. At the department level, we are working with the lead on our school counseling services, Dr. Damian Sweeney, to develop kind of a page and a video of resources to share with school districts across the state so that they know what supports and resources we have available as they support their students. But we absolutely have to address it. And it can't just be through school. It has to be a multi-pronged approach where we're talking with schools and getting them resources, but also working with parents, community members, and community stakeholders, including mental health and physicians.
Another topic that is somewhat related is school violence and school safety. We just had the one-year anniversary of the deadly shootings at Marshall County High School out in western Kentucky. What steps have you seen local districts take, and what steps do you think need to be taken further to make schools safe?
So at the local district level, one of the most promising things that I see happening is districts rallying around their schools and in the area of physical security, putting their resources together, local resources along with state resources together, to either for the first time bring in school resource officers or to increase the presence of school resource officers within their districts. Some local districts have actually gone the route of creating their own security forces. I think that's positive movement. I think we're taking the safety and security of our kids while they're in school with a level of seriousness that we've not seen in a while. I'm really encouraged by that. The other thing that I'm really encouraged about is we're not just thinking about physical security, but we're understanding across the board that the mental, the social, the emotional health of kids and their well-being is a big factor in terms of keeping them safe. And so ensuring that our kids are mentally, emotionally, and socially healthy, making sure that they have adults in the school building as well as at home and in their community that they feel comfortable with talking with is critical. Because many of the incidents that don't happen, we don't talk a whole lot about the things that are avoided. The reason those things tend to not happen is because kids feel comfortable enough with adults to share information. If we were to collect all the instances across the state of potential tragedies that are avoided because kids have relationships with adults, I think we'd be pretty astounded. At the state level, it has been really exciting to watch the work of the working committee along the Interim Joint Committee on Education that's worked over the last couple months to come together across party lines on a bipartisan basis to put forward recommendations to the General Assembly about a holistic approach to ensuring the safety and security of our kids. Those recommendations have resulted in Senate Bill 1, sponsored by Senator Max Wise, with a comprehensive approach that includes both hardening the target, thinking about school resource officers, a mechanism for educators and students to be able to anonymously report information, as well as thinking about the social and emotional health of kids. And so I'm hopeful with regards to that legislation as a strong starting place for us at the state level with policy.
We're talking with Dr. Wayne Lewis, the Kentucky Commissioner of Education, on In Conversation. I'm Rick Howlett here on WFPL. We're going to take a break, and we're going to go to the phones and take some of your calls. Call us at 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. You can also reach us through Twitter. Our hashtag is WFPL Conversation, and we're also on Facebook. You're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL.
As much as ever before, you need reliable, in-depth journalism. Our job at WFPL is to give you the facts and keep you informed, to provide context and make connections. We believe that makes our community a better place to live, and that's something worth supporting. Become a member today. Donate online at WFPL.org.
Welcome back to WFPL's In Conversation. I'm Rick Howlett. We're joined this week by Dr. Wayne Lewis, the Kentucky Commissioner of Education. And we welcome your input in this program. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Lewis, call us at 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. Or you can reach us on Twitter. Our hashtag is WFPL Conversation. We're on Facebook as well. I want to get to charter schools in a moment and some other topics, the legislative agenda for the 2019 Kentucky General Assembly. Right now, we're going to go back to JCPS as it relates to the Kentucky Department of Education. And we have a question from Mark here in Louisville. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Well, hi. How are you all this morning?
Fine, thanks. Thanks for calling.
My question is, with the student assignment plan, and they are discussing the fact of closing 11 schools and building 3 new schools and merging some of these communities together, my question to Dr. Lewis is, why are they going to close one individual school and completely isolate a neighborhood from the Jefferson County public school systems?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. I have to be honest in letting you know, though, that really is a local issue. That's within the realm of decision making of the local board of education, of the superintendent. And that's not something that is a department that we weigh into.
All right, Mark, thanks for your call. And I do, I'm sorry, did you have a follow-up question?
It's the follow-up question was, you talk about the community involvement and everything that you're talking about helping these children to further along with the parents and the children with their education. Again, this comes back to, why are you going to close a school and isolate an entire community? Please, again, it's the same question, but thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Mark, thanks for your call. We're going to have, we've reached out to JCPS, and we do plan to have Dr. Polio on the program at very soon. So we'll save that question for him as well. Let's talk about charter schools. You've been a vocal supporter of the charter school concept, charter schools. Critics say they undermine other public schools. They're not financially accountable sometimes, that it's been a mixed bag of success. Why are you such a vocal supporter of them?
Well, to be clear, first of all, I'm a vocal proponent of any method that is good for kids. I think that gets lost in the conversation. I think folks mistake my position as being one where I'm in favor of charter schools and not in favor of something else. Mm-hmm. I've spent my career, started as a classroom teacher in traditional public school districts. My daughter's in a traditional public school district. She'll likely continue to be in a traditional public school district. I'm in favor of schools, good schools, that serve kids well. And if it's a traditional public school, if it's a magnet school, if it's a charter school, whatever that public school might be, I think that should be an option for parents. The reason I think charter schools should be something we consider in Kentucky is because it gives us the opportunity to create an additional option for parents to choose from. There's no debate about the fact that parents are in favor of more choices for their kids. I've not met a parent in Kentucky or anywhere else who, when asked whether or not they'd like to have more or fewer choices to make decisions about where their kids to go to school, they say, actually, I'd like fewer choices. And actually, I'd rather just the state or the local district tell me where my kid is to go to school. It's just not the case. Charter schools are public schools in every sense of the word. And in Kentucky specifically, you know, the details of charter school laws vary a whole lot. So it's important to talk about Kentucky's law. In Kentucky, a charter school is defined as a school of choice. That means no child by law in Kentucky can ever be assigned to attend a charter school. So if you pass charter school legislation, as we have, if a charter school goes through the authorization process and gets established, if parents don't choose that option for their children, no parents decide this is where we want our kids to be, there's no charter school because you can't assign kids there.
How is it determined which teachers are assigned, for lack of a better term, or choose to teach at charter schools?
That's a great question as well. Teachers can't be assigned to work at charter schools either. Mm-hmm. The only folks who work at charter schools are folks who apply to work at charter schools. So, you know, this choice aspect, I think, is something that's been lost in the conversation. I talk to folks on a regular basis who think that charter schools are something that the state would come and create and put in a community, and we're going to close down traditional public schools and assign kids. When you read Kentucky's law, it's very clear that what they're afraid of isn't even possible.
We're talking with Dr. Wayne Lewis, the Kentucky Commissioner of Education. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Lewis, give us a call, 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. You want to talk about charter schools, want to talk about the state intervention at Jefferson County Public Schools, school safety, whatever topic is on your mind, 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. Our Twitter hashtag is WFBL Conversation. You can also contact us through Facebook as well. Getting back to charter schools, Dr. Lewis, the General Assembly has approved the creation of charter schools in Kentucky. However, there is no funding mechanism in place as of yet. Do you see that happening anytime soon?
Very hopeful. We continue to engage in conversations with members of the General Assembly. I believe there's a tremendous amount of misunderstanding around what a funding mechanism means when we talk about charter schools as well, even from folks who've been around this issue for quite a long. I think much of folks' understanding of charter school funding means that the General Assembly appropriates money to go to charter schools. That's not what the funding mechanism is. That's not what the ask is. In fact, what we're asking very simply is a mechanism whereby if a parent decides to enroll their child in a public charter school, that the same funds that follow that child to a traditional public school follow the child to the public charter school. There's no effect on state funding whatsoever. There's no additional money. It's very similar to a parent deciding to take their child from one school district, moves to another school district, and sends their kid to a school in that district. The funding that the state sends for that child follows that child to the other school district. There's a big misconception around school funding, public school funding, in that folks, I think that public schools are funded on a school basis or on a district basis, when in fact, schools are funded on a per pupil basis. Means the amount of funding that schools or districts, in fact, receive for public school students is dependent on the number of students they serve and dependent on the specific characteristics of that student. So it would make sense that if a child is attending a school in Oldham County, that the state would send that money to Oldham County. But if the child no longer attends an Oldham County school and goes to a public charter school, then the funding should follow that kid to the public charter school.
So how would this work? The local districts would estimate how many students would be in a charter school and direct the funding toward that school?
Well, it's very similar to the way it works in a district. So what we proposed in terms of legislation is that funding would continue to flow to districts in the same way that it flows. And then based on the number of kids who are actually enrolled in the public charter school, on a per pupil basis, those funds would be sent to the public charter school for those kids. It's really a very common sense approach. The same way districts are funded on a per pupil basis, we send that per pupil, those per pupil dollars to fund the public charter school.
Jody in Louisville has a question along the lines of charter school funding. Let's see what Jody has to say. Hi, Jody. Your Dr. Lewis is right here.
Hi, Dr. Lewis. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
I had to turn my radio down, so I missed part of the conversation of your last question. It sounds like mine is right in line with that. I'm curious as to where the money is going to come from. The schools are already underfunded, and so if you have a school and that is not going to be receiving as much money because money is going to be diverted to the charter schools, It seems like the infrastructure of having a new building and, you know, a whole new, bureaucracy around a new setting is going to take away from the existing schools. And I know you say it's per student, but is there some way that you are looking at trying to increase funding for all of the schools so that this doesn't divert necessary funds for the existing infrastructure and buildings that are in place?
I appreciate the question. Thank you, Jody. You know, part of this is a matter of perspective, and I appreciate Jody's perspective in this idea. And you hear folks say that with charter schools, funds would be diverted from traditional public schools. If you believe that, then you would also believe that when a child or a parent decides to enroll their child in a local private school, that funds are being diverted from a public school as well. Because again, schools are funded, public schools are funded on a per pupil basis. And for every child that attends St. X, as opposed to attending a local Jefferson County public school, those are dollars that otherwise would be going to a Jefferson County public school. We don't chastise or demonize parents for making the decision to send their child to a private school. But those funds no longer go or do not go to the local school district. What's the difference?
What about construction funds? She brought up a good point about building new schools.
That's
to house charter students. What about that money? Is that part of the per pupil equation?
That's a great question. It's actually not. So what we've proposed in Kentucky is that before the dollars are sent on a per pupil basis, that off the top, districts would keep funding that they use for facilities, for capital outlay, for debt service on facilities, because those are things that districts have to maintain. And because charter schools are schools of choice, districts have to maintain facilities and schools where every kid in the district has a place where they can be assigned. And so those dollars would come off the top. Charter schools would only receive the per pupil allocation of operating funds. Charter schools actually run on less funding than traditional public schools do, and then they have to pay for lease agreements or for rent out of the operating funds that they receive.
I have another question via email. How will at-risk students, especially very young ones, take advantage of charter schools if their parents do not enroll them? Or can we really expect parents to all of a sudden become advocates if they hadn't been?
Charter schools, by definition, in Kentucky, are schools of choice. You know, there are pros and cons to that. I believe it's positive in that the only kids who would be there would be kids whose parents believe that this is a better setting for them to be. It's really not a whole lot different than the application process that's used in Jefferson County Public School for schools of choice. The only difference I would note is that statute actually prohibits charter schools from employing some of the practices with application that Jefferson County employs with schools of choice within the district. Charter schools are actually required to be more open enrollment, per se, than local district schools of choice.
As far as the funding mechanism goes, this is not a budget year for the General Assembly. What do you hope that they will do this session to keep this going?
You know, I think what is key to the conversation is we are not asking that the General Assembly appropriate funds. What we're simply asking is for the mechanism to be outlined for the same funds that have already been appropriated to follow the child to the public charter school where parents choose to send their kid.
Could we see a charter school open as early as the next academic year in the fall?
No, you could not. You could not. If the General Assembly were to pass legislation this session creating a funding mechanism, that would lead, I believe, to applications being filed. Most charter authorizers across the country will go through that process. And it's typically a year to a year and a half after the charter school is authorized before the school actually opens.
Would you see the first charter schools opening in higher populated areas like Louisville, Lexington?
I believe you'd see the same trends that you see across the country. Most charter schools exist in urban areas. Our statute currently allows for the creation of charter schools in every one of our counties. And different than any other law, it actually sets up every local board of education in Kentucky as a charter authorizer. I don't believe another state statute does that. With that said, I don't believe you could have charter schools outside of about five counties in Kentucky.
We have a comment left by a caller over in Indiana. Was a teacher for 37 years in Indiana. The people who are benefiting the most are the people who are sending their kids to private schools who get tax breaks. Charter schools aren't doing well in Indiana. Kentucky should consider what happened there. And they have school vouchers in Indiana. Is there any enthusiasm for that here in Kentucky?
I don't believe Kentucky's constitution allows for school vouchers. So some of the opposition I've heard folks voice against charter schools is this is the gateway to school vouchers. Whether or not a state can have a voucher program is largely dependent on what the state constitution permits. With some legal analysis that we've seen, really high quality legal analysis, I don't believe vouchers are a possibility here. I do believe tax credits, scholarship tax credit policy is a possibility here. That's not the same as vouchers, but I believe that could be a strong possibility for expanding private school choice in Kentucky.
Going back to charter schools, the bill passed here in Kentucky, does that allow, is it mostly school districts that can establish charter schools, or are there other entities that can do it as well?
Yeah, so school districts would not establish charter schools. School districts already have the authority to establish schools. So there's no need for legislation or policy to give school districts that mm-hmm. authority. They can do that. What the legislation does is it sets up every local board of education as an authorizer. And the authorizer is really the most critical entity to understanding charter school policy. This is the entity that's responsible for soliciting and receiving charter school applications, for ensuring that those applications are of an extremely high caliber, so you're only approving or authorizing plans of folks who have the capacity, the knowledge, the skill to put a high-quality school on the ground. The authorizer is responsible for monitoring and for accountability. And the authorizer is the entity that will make decisions about the renewal, non-renewal, or revocation of a charter.
We're talking with Dr. Wayne Lewis, who is the Commissioner of Education in Kentucky. And we welcome your comments and questions for Dr. Lewis. You have a question about the state intervention and the corrective action program at Jefferson County Public Schools or charter schools or school safety, whatever you want to talk about today. Give us a call here on In Conversation. The number is 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255, or you can reach us through social media. Our Twitter handle, our Twitter hashtag, rather, is WFPL Conversation, and we're also reachable through Facebook as well. Give us a call, 502-814-8255. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more with Dr. Wayne Lewis here on In Conversation, coming up in a moment on 89.3 WFPL.
Kids in Louisville have a lot going on.
I've been writing since I was 11 years old.
I want to be a dancer.
I want to run for president, for governor, for senator, for mayor.
Actress / model / singer / hairstylist.
And I think young people, I think we feel even more engaged now than maybe we might have before.
Over the next year, we'll bring you their stories, their experiences, and their voices.
It's the next Louisville.
From 89.3 WFPL and the Community Foundation of Louisville.
Welcome back to WFPL's In Conversation. I'm Rick Howlett, and today we're talking with Dr. Wayne Lewis, the Kentucky Commissioner of Education. We welcome your input. Give us a call if you have a question or comment for Dr. Lewis, 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. We're on Twitter. Our hashtag is WFPL Conversation, or you can reach us through Facebook. I have a couple of Twitter questions. Pat wants to know whether charters are public or private. He says earlier you said they were public, then compared them to private schools a few times, but they are considered public schools, correct?
Charter schools are public schools. They're publicly funded. They're held accountable, actually the same way that traditional public schools are. They are required to take all of the same state assessments. They participate in the same public accountability system and are held accountable to the public, actually, through their boards that have the power or have the ability to be closed by local boards of education that can non-renew or revoke a charter school.
Let's talk about some other aspects of your legislative agenda. What else is coming up in the 2019 General Assembly that you'd like to see action on?
So really high priority for us is getting the work-ready Kentucky scholarship into statute. The work-ready Kentucky scholarship was established by executive order now almost 2 years ago, and then changed a little bit just in the summer through a second executive order. It has two really big components. One, at the post-secondary level, it provides for up to 60 credit hours in tuition for certificates, diplomas, or applied associate's degree programs in one of Kentucky's top five high-demand sectors, so advanced manufacturing, healthcare, transportation and logistics, construction and trades, IT. If you're pursuing a degree or credential in those areas, it's paid for up to 60 credit hours. The change that happened in the summer that has significance for K-12 schools is it also provides for up to two dual credit courses for students per year. So when you put together what's available through the Work Ready Kentucky Scholarship with the dual credit scholarship, high school kids now have the ability to earn upwards of 30 credit hours in post-secondary credit without tuition and fees before they graduate from high school. That's a really big deal. And we're having lots of conversations with the General Assembly to get that cemented into statute.
We're talking with Dr. Wayne Lewis, the Kentucky Commissioner of Education. 502-814-8255 is the number to call if you have a question or comment for Dr. Lewis. Now, there is a bill moving moving through the legislature regarding site-based councils and some changes on the hiring of principals.
Yes,
you support this bill?
I do. There are two critical parts to that bill that are really high priority for us. One, by statute, since the establishment of school-based decision-making councils with CARA in the early 1990s, the statutory requirement for the composition of the councils is three teachers to two parents to one administrator. The change we'd like to see in composition is to have an equal number of teachers to parents. So rather than mandating by statute that there have to be more teachers than parents, we want to see equal numbers. Parent voice, parent empowerment is a really big deal for me, for the department. It's a really big deal for my board. And anything that we can do to increase parent voice, parent engagement in school decision making and in the lives of their kids, we want to support that. In terms of the authority to hire principals, this really is a common sense move for us. For context, we are the only state in the country where superintendents don't have the ability to hire principals. We hold districts to a much higher level of performance accountability than we ever have before. We're setting higher standards. We're setting higher expectations for kids and districts' performance. It follows, it makes sense that as we're holding these superintendents accountable for the performance of their districts, that they ought to, at the very least, have the ability to hire their senior level leaders at the school level.
We have a question on Twitter from Allison regarding apparently legislation from last year. Dr. Lewis, you helped with dyslexia legislation in 2018 and made sure dyslexia toolkit was developed in four Kentucky schools. I'm grateful. I'd like to know why the KDE Dyslexia Task Force was not utilized in the process, and will you use their expertise in the future?
Well, first, I don't believe it's the case that the task force wasn't used. I believe the input from the task force went into creating the legislation, and then we consulted experts at the state level and at the national level as well with the development of that toolkit. You're absolutely right. I think that legislation was a game changer. It was a really important first step for us in creating more awareness of dyslexia, to help educators, parents, and community members better understand what dyslexia is, to ensure that teachers have the background and some training to identify the characteristics of dyslexia and then be able to make referrals as appropriate.
We have some folks who want to weigh in some more on charter schools. Let's go to Frankfurt and Andrew. Hi, Andrew. You're on with Dr. Lewis.
Dr. Lewis, a question that I've had, and it's been bubbling up for some time, is special needs kids in regards to chartered schools. There was either a truth or not that special needs kids could go to chartered schools, but if they weren't comfortable there and wanted to leave, that they could go back to public schools, but the money that they took with them to chartered schools would stay at the chartered schools. Is that correct or incorrect?
No, sir, that's incorrect. Kids who have disabilities have the right to choose public charter schools just like anybody else. In fact, in the regulation, Kentucky's regulations around charter schools, we went to great lengths to make it very explicit that kids have the right, parents have the right to choose charter schools for their kids. If a parent believes that a charter school is best suited to meet their child's needs, then that's where they should apply and send their child. Funding questions, the details of funding questions, that's going to have to be worked out in legislation. But I can assure you, under no circumstance would you have a case where a kid gets sent back or a kid chooses to go back to a traditional public school district, and then the district doesn't get the funding that supports that child.
Andrew, thanks for your call. We have another Twitter question. Do charter teachers have to have the same qualifications as traditional teachers and keep the same certificates?
That's a great question. And you know, what these questions highlight, Rick, is honestly how different state laws are about charter schools and why you can't make generalizations about charter schools across the board. So I'm going to respond to the question with Kentucky's law. And Kentucky's law, different than many other laws, requires that teachers in public charter schools have the same certification as public school teachers anywhere else.
Sharon has a question along those lines. Can charter schools be run by for-profit industries like what happens on the East Coast?
So Kentucky's law requires that the holder of the charter, the board that holds the charter, not be a for-profit entity. It has to be a nonprofit entity. Charter schools, that board is permitted to contract with a not-for-profit or a for-profit entity for educational services, which can include comprehensive management of the schools. One of the things that's not often understood in this area is that traditional public school districts have the same authority. Under Kentucky law, if a traditional public school district, if Jefferson County Public Schools decided we want to bring in an educational service provider to provide comprehensive management for one of our schools, Jefferson County Public Schools is permitted by law to do that.
Another question from Laura in Southern Indiana. Laura, you're on with Dr. Lewis. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask if there would be a provision for transportation and meals for the students, because without that, you're creating sort of the illusion of choice, but a lot of parents wouldn't be able to afford to get their children to and from school by themselves and or provide their lunches, pack their lunches, especially if they are reduced or free lunch in the public school system.
Great question. Thank you very much. Charter schools are public schools, and so meals would be provided for kids in the same way that they are with traditional public schools. And it's not necessary that it's in the legislation, but it is actually in the legislation that kids who qualify for free and reduced price lunch, that they would qualify for free and reduced price lunch at public charter schools as well. The transportation question as well is an incredibly important question, because across the country, states have handled this differently. And in fact, in some states, there are different types of charter schools that require transportation and others that do not. I will tell you my non-negotiable position on transportation in terms of what I would be supportive of in charter school legislation. Is that kids have to be provided with transportation at no cost. What we'd like to see is districts have the first option to be able to provide transportation for kids who attend public charter schools. And if districts and charters can't come to terms on that, then the transportation dollars that flow to districts for public charter school students, that those dollars would be transferred to the charter school, and the charter school would be required to provide that transportation for students. Because I agree with the caller. If there's no transportation, it's not a real choice for kids and for parents.
We're talking with Dr. Wayne Lewis, Kentucky Commissioner of Education. You have a question? 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. Let's go to Brian in New Albany, who has a question about the effect of charter schools on teachers in traditional schools. Hi, Brian. You're on with Dr. Lewis.
Hi there. It's not an effect on teachers. Well, it's an effect on number of teachers. In Indiana, so much money goes with each student that it doesn't take very many students at all before you wind up losing a teacher as funding for a whole teacher for a class with the amount of money that leaves with just a few number of students. So those students go to the charter, but then the public school is left in a worse situation because the class size gets bigger. I would rather see you spend more money on fighting the or helping in the social economic situation of these kids from these low-income families to give them the support systems that so many other kids have that are successful. When you look at if you have those support systems in place, then you're equaling the playing field for kids, and they're more successful in the schools as they are. Mm-hmm. That's just my point. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. You want to follow up on that?
Sure, and I appreciate the question. I think it's a great question, great comment. When you take a look at Kentucky, or you look at schools across the country, one of the things the research actually bears out is the correlation between spending more and effectiveness is not quite what people would think it is. Some schools in Kentucky and across the country that are extremely successful with low-income kids are not necessarily the schools that spend more. So you'll never get me to the place where I'll say that funding is not important. Funding's extremely important. But there is not a straight line correlation between just spend more money, just give them more money, just give them more resources, and they'll be more effective. The other piece that's key to his question and his comment is a fundamental piece of charter school reform is giving parents options, giving parents the ability to choose schools for their kids. And I have to believe that if a parent decides that the better place for my child is this public charter school, that we should do everything that we can as a public education system to honor that wish and give parents the ability to send their kids there and provide that the taxpayer dollars, of which parents are taxpayers, follow their kid to that public charter school.
Let's go to another call. Scott is in Glasgow. Scott, you're on the air with Dr. Lewis. Welcome.
Thank you, gentlemen. Research shows, I mean, and it's tested over time. This isn't a one or two case study basis, but public schools are actually outperforming charters in most states. And just 2 years ago in southern Indiana, literally minutes across the bridge from Louisville, we had a charter school that closed mid-year. And there were teachers that were let go, and there were students that were left on their own to find a school mid-year. I mean, and they were given less than a month's notice. So I'm not exactly sure why you feel this is going to be the magic bullet for Kentucky. I can't wait to hear your comments.
I appreciate the question. You know, it's one of those questions I get quite a bit. Let me deal with the last part of what he said first. Mm-hmm. You know, I hear lots of folks that say, I don't understand why you think this is going to be the magic bullet. I challenge anyone to ever find a place where I've said or suggested that it was a magic bullet. I think that if successful, a charter school movement in Kentucky might lead to about 5 to 7% of the kids in Kentucky attending public charter schools. Even if all of those charter schools were wildly successful, that falls far, far short of being a magic bullet. Charter schools are not a magic bullet. It's the ability to provide parents with additional high quality options. With respect to charter schools closing, I have to tell you this as well. I think that's one of the positive parts of charter school reform. One of the things that's positive is that when schools are unsuccessful and are found that they are not serving kids appropriately, they're not living up to the terms in their charters, that there's the ability to non-renew or revoke a charter. One of the reasons I think charter schools have not been as successful as they could be is because some states have been too slow to pull the trigger and revoke or non-renew charters for non-performance when they've not performed. And then in terms of the research that he cited, the research is much more nuanced than he characterizes it, whether you're talking about Indiana specifically or across the country. I would point you to the high-quality randomized control or quasi-experimental design is more appropriate studies that look at comparing kids, demographically, academically similar kids who attend public charter schools and who do not. And one of the things the research shows is that the greatest impact, the greatest increases in performance happen in urban context for low-income kids, especially low-income kids of color. When you group all kids in all public charter schools together across the states and you look at the performance, it ends up looking about the same for kids who attend public charter schools and who do not. But when you break out the performance of low-income kids of color in urban context, that's not the case. The thing we shouldn't forget is the very population of kids that public charter schools are showing the most promise with is the population of kids that we are struggling the most to improve performance in our traditional public schools.
And we have about a minute left in the program. We have a message from on Twitter from Gay Edelman, who's been an outspoken person in the education realm. The law says a charter operator may, not shall, but may serve at-risk students, yet these students typically cost more to educate and score lower on tests. What incentives do charter operators have to give preference to these students when they risk being shut down if they underperform?
Well, first, she's misquoted the statute. The statute does not say they may serve at-risk students. The statute says that they may give preference to at-risk students in the application. Charter schools may choose to give preference to students come from low-income backgrounds or to students with disabilities. If charter schools choose not to give that preference, then they are required to be completely open enrollment schools to anyone who applies.
And I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today's In Conversation. Thank you, Dr. Wayne Lewis, for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
We also want to thank our In Conversation production team, Caitlin Jackson, Brad Yost, Ashley Clark Thompson, Russell Wells. Our opening and closing theme was composed by Kojin Tashiro. This program is also available as a podcast. Next week, we'll discuss the effort to lure an NBA franchise to Louisville and whether the city is ready to support a major league sports team. And we hope to hear from you then. I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for joining us on WFPL's In Conversation. Next time on WFPL's In Conversation, is Louisville prepared to support a big league sports franchise? Our guests will include Basketball Hall of Famer Dan Issel, who's leading the effort to bring an NBA team to Louisville. And of course, we'll take your questions and comments. Join us for the next In Conversation, Friday at 11 a.m. on 89.3 WFPL.